welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, he's back. You know, he hasn't been on in a little while, but he hasn't forgotten about us. Robert Mazur, retired DEA. You know, he spent 27 years working for the federal government at three different agencies. He's probably best known for his undercover work in infiltrating the Medellin cartel and doing a lot of work against Pablo Escobar. He wrote a book called The Infiltrator, and they turned that into a movie, and it's a New York Times bestseller. And then the other one, The Betrayal, fascinating books, could not put them down, another bestseller, and they're currently making The Betrayal into a movie as well. He's got an excellent pedigree, and he's the perfect guy to have on this show to talk about our first main topic, which I'll get to in just 1 second. So welcome to the show, Robert Mazur. Very excited to have you back on. And we've also got a retired Tulsa Police Major, Travis Yates at travisyates.org. So thank you for tearing yourself away from doing your tour around the country, Travis, and making it on our little, nationally syndicated satellite radio show. We appreciate it. And also Jeff Weninger, he's got that new book coming out, On Thin Ice. He's a former commander, LAPD. And yeah, he ran Rampart when the feds took over. And you can also get more information about him. He retired as a lieutenant. He's now in Ohio, but at jeffweninger.com. Or if you want more information on the book that's getting ready to come out, On Thin Ice book. .com as well. So thanks for being on the show, gentlemen. A shout out to our sponsors, Gulls, our title sponsor at Gulls.com. Our satellite sponsor, ComplianceTechnologies.com. Thanks to them. I think we're wrapping up our ninth week on satellite. Gunlearn.com, BlueTheGold.com, MyMedicare.life, and Safeguard Recruiting, our streaming sponsor. And right now we're streaming to outlets with 1.5 million followers, thanks to Safeguard. So we appreciate it. Also, TwoBells.com, they built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. Check out the cool gear, like the shirt that I'm wearing. And also a shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thank you for carrying our content, Brian. Also, Ray Diedrich, former lawman.com and lawofficer.com. Thanks to all these entities for helping make the show happen. Now, what in the world are we going to be talking about today? You know, Robert Mazur is going to be all over this first one. It's a main topic. They have a tendency to be a little bit deeper. In fact, we're going to devote up to half the show on this. It is cartel hacker used FBI agent's phone surveillance cameras to track and kill informants, report finds. It's a fascinating story. When you hear what happened, it's going to leave you scratching your head saying, how in the world could this happen? And the cartel has got access to surveillance cams around. It's just kind of crazy when you hear what they did. So we're going to be talking about that story first. We've also got, there's an update story. I don't know if we're going to have time to get to it or not, but Massachusetts State Police Sergeant who supervised the Karen Reed case has been reassigned. They weren't happy with some performance issues. We have a body cam release of a fatal shootout with a Woodridge police officer or officers inside the Royal Albert Hotel. I think we had two or three agencies in there, and including the NYPD. It was a massive shootout, and we had three people hit in the shootout. It's interesting to watch the performance of the guy that had the long gun, the law enforcement guy with the long gun on this one. And then we've got Bexar County Sheriff's Office in Texas. They released body cam footage of a deputy shooting a suspect multiple times amid a chase. And then we got a man fires a flare gun at a Marion County Sheriff's deputy that's here in Florida while the deputy's, checking on him. So that's an interesting one. The guy does some weird things, Travis, like taking his pants off and he's shirtless already, just some weird stuff. So look, let's start off with the Medellin cartel, rvmnews.com, which is the Red Voice Media news outlet. Cartel hacker used FBI agent's phone surveillance cameras to track and kill informants to report finds. So it's a fascinating story. The Mexican cartel hacker allegedly infiltrated the phone of an FBI official assigned to the U.S. Embassy in Mexico City, and he used surveillance tools, which is what really impressed me, to track and in some cases kill informants working with the U.S. government, according to a newly surfaced FBI audit obtained by Reuters. Now, I'm not saying that I think this is great, but when you hear the level of sophistication the cartel has achieved, and Bob can tell us whether they've always had that level or not, but I'm surprised. The hacker, reportedly hired by the Sinaloa cartel, formerly led by notorious drug lord El Chapo, was able to gain remote access to the FBI agent's phone, or I should rather say this cartel was. Now, from there, the individual monitored incoming and outgoing calls, and they tracked the phone's location data, according to this audit, as reported by the New York Post. It goes on to say that using the compromised information that they were able to get a hold of, the hacker also accessed Mexico City's public street surveillance system. Wow. Allowing the cartel operatives to observe who the agent was meeting with in real time, if you can believe that. And then the findings suggested the cartel was able to use the data to identify and retaliate against informants. According to the report, some of the informants were just intimidated. Others were killed as a direct result of the breach. And it goes on, the timeline of the breach remains unclear. Also, the identity of the FBI agent has not been revealed either, or the hacker responsible. It also remains unknown how many informants were affected. The breach highlights the growing challenges faced by U.S. intelligence and law enforcement officials that are operating overseas. And I'm going to go in and leave it there. Bob Mazur, this is your wheelhouse. This is your expert level stuff. So I can't wait to hear what you have to say about this.
Yeah, well, I got the opportunity to be in two long-term undercover operations, collectively 5 years working undercover, first with the Medellin cartel and secondly with the Cali cartel. And I can tell you that at least from a safety factor standpoint, the one thing that anytime you're involved in a long-term investigation, a major criminal case, you've got to remember, always assume the targets are smarter than you. And if you don't have that front of mind as you're going into this, you're going to make a lot of mistakes. And the other thing that I think is extraordinarily important, and a lot of people have been given credit with this quote, but Winston Churchill is one of them. And those that fail to learn from history are doomed to repeat it. If you look at this case, it is parallel to a 1990 case involving the Cali cartel. In that instance, they engaged a guy who was in the Colombian Army Reserve, a counterintelligence expert, who was working with British commandos that were involved in hunting down Pablo Escobar with the Cali cartel. And he had the ability and did a lot of tracking of telephone activities, of cameras that were used to see who was coming and going at the embassy in Bogota. He wound up becoming the head of security. His name is Jorge Salcedo. Jorge Salcedo Cabrera, and he actually, if you watch Netflix, the third season, he's in there, and you can see just how they did a great job, because he actually worked on that as a technical consultant, but he was a college-educated engineer and a counter-surveillance expert, and so among other things, he not only does he have 150 people working for him to maintain security, he also uses what was the cutting edge at that time of counter-surveillance equipment to be able to, number one, help them to track down Pablo Escobar, then after Escobar was killed, to protect the Orjuela family. Eventually, he decided to become a DEA informant. And actually, his first stop was Tampa, Florida. When he came to the U.S. and was going into the Witness Protection Program, one of my good friends, and I think he might be yours as well, Bob Quinn. Bob was a babysitter for him for a while. And so I think that it's really interesting to me that people who are working today, when there's the technology that we know that exists out there today, don't, number one, study history to see that these people have this kind of sophistication and wind up putting themselves in a position to be able to be compromised, as this FBI assistant attaché was. And, you know, part of this, I think, comes about, there's a factor in, you know, I tell you, I watched these videos that you guys are going to be showing later, and the bravery of people on the front line dealing with that type of threat. It's a different type of environment than me, where I was embedded, living with the bad guys. Mind for me, the only person that really could screw things up on my end, for me, I thought, was myself. So I really needed to stay as focused as I possibly could on counter surveillance and security. But I did notice that a lot of people around me, because you know, you don't get to do these cases alone. You develop information to the point where, let's say, for example, we were picking up $1 million, $2 million at a time in New York. The New York office wants to have surveillance out there. So I would be schooled by people who were in the cartel One guy was portrayed in the Infiltrator movie by Benjamin Bratt. His name is Roberto El Cayeno, and he was one of the major transporters and distributors for Pablo Escobar. And Roberto kind of, everybody said he took me in as kind of the son he never had. He had two daughters. I knew his two daughters, his wife, his three girlfriends. I knew him really, really well. And he sat me down and he said, "Hey, listen, you need to make sure you get counter surveillance out there to make sure your people are clean. This is what you need to look for. You're going to look for gringos. They're going to be white guys who are going to be in their late 20s, early 30s. They're going to be wearing blue jeans. They'll have jogging shoes on. Most often they're going to wear pullover solid shirts with collars. They're probably going to have a fanny pack. And, you know, that's where their guns are going to be." So I had just come back from Paris where I met with Pablo Escobar's lawyer, and we made arrangements to start getting big pickups, million, 2 million, twice a day. So I thought, well, I better go in. I want to go in and I never wanted to go into a government office, but this time I wanted to go in to talk to the people who are going to do the surveillance. So I walked in the room, and here's this room full of gringos in their late 20s, early 30s, wearing blue jeans, jogging shoes, solid pullover shirts with collars. I've got 15 seconds. Well, I'll give you the punchline later, but if you ever try to explain to New York cops what they're doing wrong, you can imagine what happened.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, look, perfect timing. We're up for our first commercial break. So, guys, stick with us. We'll be right back. Now it's time to talk about Gauls at Gauls.com. And, you know, as police officers, we all know we can buy our gear from a lot of different sources. And then when you throw the online mix into it, we can get just about anything from anywhere, right? But I want to remind you guys about the importance of supporting the companies that actually support law enforcement. And I don't know of a company that fits that bill better than Gauls at Gauls.com. Even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which, of course, they do in spectacular fashion. And they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking for gear, please go to our title sponsor at Gauls.com for your purchase. I think you'll be very, very glad that you did. And they have gift cards. In fact, we give away a couple every week on the show. Hook up your family, friends, and loved ones with a new Gauls gift card at Gauls.com, and they'll be your new best friends. And if you haven't been to Gauls lately, you know, our panelist, Captain Brett Bartlett, always says they pretty much have everything except for guns and ammo. And it's really impressive. And they got fantastic choices on boots. Head over there now, Gauls.com. Welcome back to Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host for a law enforcement nationally syndicated talk show. And we're joined by our special guest. You know, he's really been on the show quite a few times, but Robert Mazur, former DEA and the author of the book, The Infiltrator, and also The Betrayal. And those are both, well, The Infiltrator's been a movie, fantastic movie, and The Betrayal is currently in production right now. And, you know, everybody here should recognize the name, Robert Mazur or Bob Mazur. We've also got retired Major Travis Yates and retired Lieutenant Jeff Winninger on the show as well. And we're talking about an FBI story where an FBI agent got compromised and you know, over in Colombia. And I have to admit that I was quite surprised at the technology available to the cartel. And Bob was explaining to us what he went through when he infiltrated the Medellin cartel. And you know, was working on the Pablo Escobar case, but also, you know, I was going to ask you at the end of it, but I guess I can ask you now. So there's no surprises or doubt in your mind that the technology, what they were able to do and be able to access his phone and to track it and to use surveillance around the city to see who he's meeting with in real time and stuff and identify informants and stuff. Bob, all that sounds pretty legit, huh?
No doubt whatsoever. You know, they've got the money to buy the talent, and they do. You know, I was telling you the story about the surveillance agents dressing the way that the bad guys told me they were going to be dressing. But worse than that, so then they did the surveillance, and guess what? There was counter surveillance out there, and they picked up on it. And then Amir Abreu, my partner, who is the best undercover agent that has ever walked this planet, he gets a phone call from a guy in the background is a guy by the name of Gerardo Moncada. Gerardo Moncada was the major manager for Pablo Escobar. And he's screaming in the back, that I, well, my name undercover was Musella. He's screaming in the background, Musella has to be a DEA agent. There was surveillance everywhere out there. And then I had to try to talk my way out of it. And ultimately I got lucky and did. But, you know, there are a lot of things like, it's hard to imagine that some people would suggest this, but now like take my next undercover operation and you don't have to be able to hack into phones or to necessarily hack into cameras, although that's done all the time. You have to be really mindful. Not only can they do that, but you have to be mindful that they're smarter than you. And if you're not, and you put your guard down, here's a couple of examples. I'm getting ready to go to Colombia undercover. And my boss says, hey, when you go through, I don't want you using your undercover passport. I go, what? He goes, oh yeah, yeah. You know, you got to go through with your normal passport. I go, wait a minute. I'm going to go there to see this guy who has Colombian customs people on the take. And I'm going to use my undercover passport? Not happening. I'm not going. So I wound up getting to use my real one. And then I go like, he goes, you're going to have to meet at the embassy. I go, well, if I go to the embassy, I can't walk through the front door. I guarantee you they're taking pictures. I would be, if I was a bad guy, I would be taking pictures of who's going in and out of there. I'd have a camera set up, a pole camera or something that's out there. And you know, they owned police officers, not to say that they own, I mean, a lot of very, very brave Colombian police officers lost their lives trying to do the right thing. But unfortunately, you know, they buy people. And so you've got to be prepared for them being sneakier than you are. So I'm told, oh, don't worry. The guy who's going to pick you up is going to have you in a blacked out windows, and he's going to drive you through and down into the internal parking garage. You won't even be seen. So guy picks me up. I get in the car. The windows aren't tinted. Now we're getting to the embassy and he goes, we'll get out. I go, get out. What are you talking about? This, I was supposed to be taken down there. Now I'm in a car where I'm arguing with somebody who they probably know is an agent. And so I just got out of the car and went into the embassy. But you're going to wind up with things like that. And as a law enforcement officer, especially as a young law enforcement officer, if something doesn't make sense, speak up and say it. I remember being, you know, my first times at DEA, and I'm at a briefing at 4 a.m. about a place we're going to hit, you know, in a couple of hours. And I'm listening to the plan and I'm going, man, I think there's a, what if this happens? What if that happens? You got to, you know, raise your hand. That's the time to do it. Everybody's counting on everybody thinking worst case scenario. Don't get lackadaisical. You have to recognize that people's lives are at danger. But if you didn't speak up and what you said could have been of value to the team that was there, I wouldn't want to live through that. You know, it's up to you to be brave and have the courage to speak up about stuff like that. You know, I talk about technology. I got the opportunity to participate with permanent staff in just temporarily on one HSI undercover school. And they had all these young bucks who were in there, and they're dying to go undercover, and they're going to do this and they're going to do that. And yeah. And so they take their pictures in the, you know, in the beginning of the whole thing. And one of the guys who was an instructor was also very, very good with facial recognition software. And during the class, he spent the time going on the internet just with those pictures, with that picture and facial recognition software, finding all kinds of pictures of the people who were in there. At law enforcement function, at, you know, all types of things that tied them to law enforcement. And at the end saying, you know, well, you guys ready to go? Oh yeah. Well, let me see, let me show you what's on the internet. And got into their social media because the facial recognition was enabling them to identify who they were. So then now you get into their social media. If you're going to be on social media, if you're going to have your mug out there, and you're going to do undercover, recognize the fact that if we have facial recognition software we use, they have facial recognition. And you know what that has begun to do? It's begun to cause us to use informants more than we have been using agents in long-term cases. And that has its dangers as well.
Oh, wow. Fascinating, fascinating stuff. Guys, it's time for a second commercial break. So look, stick with us. We will be back. Now it's time to talk about compliant technologies. And you know, in the world protection goes beyond physical safety, and it's about safeguarding those that are on the front lines from what we call hidden threats. And that's where MITEQ, which is a division of Compliant Technologies, comes in. Now, MITEQ provides advanced protective solutions that are designed for law enforcement, corrections, and also first responders. Now, they're Eagle Protect nitrile gloves. They offer four-hour fentanyl and xylene protection, giving you peace of mind in high-risk environments. Plus, their MyShield disinfectants and sanitizers eliminate 99.9% of germs, bacteria, and viruses on contact. Plus, they continue the kill for up to 28 days, helping you stay protected both on and off duty. So when it comes to safety and it's non-negotiable, trust MITEQ to deliver the protection that you need. You can learn more about how to equip your team today by going to compliantechnologies.com/MITEQ. Again, compliantechnologies.com/MITEQ, because the best defense starts with the right protection. Now it's time to talk about Blue the Gold at bluethegold.com. If you're struggling with the ins and outs of warrantless searches and seizures, or if you're worried about the liability in case you get it wrong, say hello to bluethegold.com. They translate search and seizure doctrines into clear, straightforward concepts that any officer can relate to. Plus, they give the training for free thanks to bluethegold.com's free weekly webinars. Now, coming up next week, July 16th, it's CAT out-of-the-bag searches. You can sign up at bluethegold.com today and join thousands of your peers in blue and step up your legal game, because, frankly, you and your agency cannot afford not to. Again, that is bluethegold.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, your host for a law enforcement talk show. We've got Robert Mazur, retired DEA, author of The Infiltrator and The Betrayal, books and movies, and of course, 27 years working for the federal government, most famous for, I believe, his role of the DEA in infiltrating
Medellin cartel.
Medellin cartel. Thank you. And my wife's Colombian, and I can't even remember that. So that's pretty sad. So, but thank you for being on the show. Also, Major Travis Yates, and also retired Lieutenant Jeff Weninger from LAPD. We've been talking about the Medellin cartel. We've been talking about an FBI case, but now we've evolved to where the conversation has been going down the rabbit hole and just learning some fascinating stuff. And people watching the show who really have no clue or inside knowledge about the complexities of undercover work and things that can go wrong. Bob's been shedding a lot of light on that. So, Bob, I know that we're in the closing minutes of this portion of the show, but go ahead. The floor is yours.
Okay. Just a couple of things that, it sounds so simple when you think about it, but sometimes we don't keep it front of mind. I never, ever use my undercover phone to communicate with anything other than the bad guys. Never, ever. Back in the day, you know, I could go to a payphone. It's easy to get a burner phone, but if you're going to mingle the communications, you're definitely looking to wind up getting compromised at the least. Hotel phones, especially in foreign countries, those are always going to be listened to. I remember going to Costa Rica and I read some other agent's book, and they were talking about the fact that they went down there and they wound up getting compromised because they used the phone to talk to somebody in the office. That's really a formula for compromise and death. Assuming counter surveillance, one thing we did find is that the main bad guy that I dealt with, his people in Chicago, were calling payphones. This is back in the day of payphones that were all around within the vicinity of my undercover business that I had. And so, you know, they do that type of stuff. Safe house meets, I'd leave like an hour before. And if you could follow me, I'm getting in and out of buildings, up and down, going through elevators, going through stairwells. I did everything that I possibly could to try to flush out a tail before I would actually meet someplace. And I know people are going to go like, you're paranoid, you don't need to do that. Oh yeah, you do need to do that. A big thing, if you're going to work undercover, one of the things that I was told by an old timer, and he couldn't have been more right. If you can do it yourself, do it yourself. You know, getting an American Express card from headquarters, you have no idea who it is. His name is on a document at American Express. If the account becomes overdrawn, you know, call ASAC so-and-so. you know, you really need to do everything yourself. And my last example of that, I had a passport, undercover passport. Amir and I get undercover passports sent to us through headquarters. They show up. They were issued on the same day, sequential numbers, both issued in Washington, D.C. I said, I'm not going to use this. You're out of your mind. And so I went, I got my own passport using my phony ID. Now I need to get stamps in my passport after a while. And I said, well, why don't we send it around to the different embassies and have our people go and, you know, get them the stamp what we want. No. The FBI lab will handle it. So I get my passport back with all these beautiful stamps. I go through Heathrow Airport. I give the guy my passport. He looks down, he looks up, and he goes, where'd you get the phony chops? I said, excuse me? He goes, where'd you get the phony chops? What I found out was, but the FBI apparently didn't know, the emblems are the border of the emblems, although it looks pretty much the same, they're changed every 2 years or so. So the date that I had didn't fit the circle, the perimeter of the emblem from where it was. And this immigration officer at Heathrow picked that up in about 5 seconds. So do it yourself if you can. Make sure you speak up if you see things that you don't think seem right. And keep in front of mind that the bad guys are smarter than you.
Wow. Excellent advice. And Robert Mazur, robertmazur.com is how people can get more information about you. And I know that you're a keynote speaker. Is that the best way for people to get a hold of you and get more information?
Yeah. And there's a contact page there so they can reach me right through that.
Excellent. And I gotta ask the betrayal, any insight on when we can look for that to hit theaters?
No, I'm just now working with them on kind of finalizing the screenplay. We had it done, but unfortunately, and Amazon Studios bought it, but the screenwriter we had at the time didn't deliver in time. So now we're supposed to have a meeting coming up soon with Netflix, but we wanted to get the screenplay finalized before we went in. And luckily for me, Bryan Cranston wants to be in the sequel as he was in The Infiltrator. And that's a big seller because, you know, he's got quite a reputation, but we better get it done soon because Brian's not getting any younger.
the rest of us are, of course. Yeah. All right. Well, excellent. Hey, thank you so much. And hey, if you guys are ready, we do have a story with some stories with a video component, which is all right, that I'd like to run through real quick here. So we've only got a little bit of time here left, but let's see. We've got this story has got a video component, and it is at rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. Body cam release of a fatal shootout with Woodbridge police inside the Royal Albert Hotel. The videos that Bob Mazur was referring to that he had watched. And so Woodbridge, New Jersey. So on Tuesday, the New Jersey Attorney General released footage from three police body cams, and it's related to a New York guy that was fatally shot during an encounter with Woodbridge police and also the NYPD on June the 13th, 2024. So this happened about a year ago at the Royal Albert Palace Hotel. So Carl Gregory, 46 years old of New York, he was wanted for shooting in New York City, and they found out that he was staying at the motel. Now, Gregory was killed in the shootout with Woodbridge police officers, and also they had NYPD there as well. I believe it was the detective in the hotel lobby. So on June 12th, 2024, officers from the Edison Police Department, they get information about, it's from an automated license plate reader, and they found this guy through the auto plate reader. He's wanted for a shooting in New York City, and it left the victim with life-threatening injuries, but they found out that the tag reader of this guy's in the area. So officers from Edison and Woodbridge Police Departments, they respond to Royal Albert's Palace Hotel in Woodbridge, and they locate this unoccupied car just in the hotel parking lot. So now they notify NYPD, and we got NYPD detectives that are joining other officers at the Woodbridge Motel. It's after midnight. It's June the 13th. And while they're inside the hotel interviewing a civilian that's in the lobby, at 12:21 a.m., the hotel, the elevator doors, they open up, and you got this dude walking out, and he's carrying multiple bags in both hands, including one of those being a backpack. And so he exits the doors. Now, look, just to kind of put a visual here, the elevator doors open up, and they're in a hallway, but it's at the end of the hallway. If he keeps walking straight and to the left, he's going to be into the hotel lobby. Well, he sees, as he's walking towards the lobby, he sees at least three cops there, one with a long gun, and they're looking right at him. And so the dude just starts backing away from them. But behind him in the hallway that he's backing up towards, we have two officers that he never sees. And so he drops the other bags except for the backpack, and he's pulling out a gun. And right when he does that, the first officer with a body cam goes up and he grabs the bad guy. And I swear, to me, it looks like our officer discharges his firearm right about where the bad guy's elbow is, and the body cam is what it looks like, and the fight is on, and the shootout starts. And then we've got, and I'm going mostly from memory on this because it's ingrained, but then you've got other body cams you're watching. Well, these two officers fighting with the bad guy, they're pretty much, for the most part, on their own. So you hear, you know, body cam gets dislodged. You get little glimpses of stuff here and there, but you hear the firefights going on, and both officers get hit. Bad guy ends up dying. But then you get other body cams in the lobby where we got our other three officers. One of them's got a long gun. He does engage the bad guy in the very beginning. The bad guy sees him when he gets off the elevator, starts backing up, pulls out the gun. And our guy with the rifle leaves the side of the cover, stands in the middle of the hallway, but then he starts taking incoming fire. And also when he's firing, he's got the two detectives or the two officers behind the bad guy too. So I don't know how the backdrop, how safe that was, but our cop with the long gun flees. He runs away, and he never engages back in that hallway until he hears from the two guys that are shot, "Hey, it's clear. Coast is clear. You can come in now." So that's kind of the way that it goes down. Commentary on this gentleman, whoever wants to go first. And, but it was a wild shootout. Bob, I know that your mic's open, so do you want to start us off on this one?
Yeah, I was kind of surprised. You could clearly see the gun coming out of the bag, and the officer's behind him. So, and he knows that the gun is going to be, it's about to get pointed right toward the other officers. So at that stage, I mean, from my perspective, it's time for that guy to say goodbye to the world.
I'm not arguing with you. Yeah. No, good point. And Travis, I know you want to talk about this, but now you're going to have to wait. Hey, we're coming up on our last commercial break, but stick with us, guys. I'm also going to make an announcement on the commercial break about a couple contests that I forgot to make announcements for earlier, so we'll be right back. All right, guys. You know, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us into trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and even disciplinary issues, but GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at GunLearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Affianco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, the founder, Dan O'Kelly, he's got an idea and a deal for you. If you have your own agency, you can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. You can go to GunLearn.com to get more information. Again, that site, it's GunLearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, your host. We've got Robert Mazur, author of bestseller, and it is The Infiltrator and Betrayal. They've also made the movie, The Infiltrator, The Betrayal is coming up. And we've also got Major Travis Yates from Tulsa Police Department, Lieutenant Jeff Wininger from LAPD. So thanks for being on the show, gentlemen. You know, this last story that we just talked about, it's got a video component, and we've got a bad guy that's wanted for some bad stuff. And he's in New Jersey, but they call NYPD over there. This guy's wanted for a shooting where he messed up a guy. And they're in there interviewing a witness, and the dude comes down and the elevator doors open and he sees the cops. He starts backing away and he pretty much backs right into two other cops he never even sees. There's like, I counted five cops there. There's a shootout, two cops in the hallway that he backs into. They get shot. He gets shot. Bad guy dies. The cops, they get shot in the hallway, end up living. But you've got a cop with a long gun in the lobby that engages, retreats, and then engages when it's over again. I'm curious what you guys, what the take is from everybody. Bob Mazur's already gone. And he is, I didn't mention this earlier, but he is silhouetted because of his work with the DEA and the undercover nature of it and for his safety. And if you guys watch if you read the latest book, The Betrayal, and watch the movie when it comes out, you'll understand exactly why he is silhouetted and you'll be able to appreciate it. But Travis Yates, the floor is yours.
Yeah, you know, every time we watch these videos, I tend to focus on what is occurring before the chaos, right, before the shots are fired. And we call those in the profession pre-attack indicators. And you have a huge indicator to begin with. He's a shooting suspect, right? So they were pretty prepared for that. But the first indicator that they knew that something was going to not go normal, you know, he wasn't going to comply, was when he dropped the bag, right, when he released that first bag. And it became pretty obvious. They picked up on that from square one. They were ready for that. Because the whole idea here is when you get in a gunfight, you don't want to wait for that threat, right? Because they'll beat you to that. We call it action versus reaction. It takes about a quarter of a second to pull a gun up and shoot. It takes you about a third of a second to recognize a threat if you're waiting for that. So obviously they were ready because of the background of the suspect and the crime committed. But when he dropped that bag, physically, I think it became very important to them and anyone watching that video that it's on. And as Robert said, it was time for us to win and him to lose.
Yeah. Excellent. All right. You're on thin ice, Jeff Wininger.
Yeah. You know, when I ran the Rampart Gang Unit, we did a lot of, tactical operations. And oftentimes they would involve cooperation with outside agencies. And one of the key factors that I think is very, very important, which is kind of a takeaway from what I saw here, was when you have multiple agencies involved, it's best to have the tactical high threat positions all one agency, because you have the confidence of uniform training and you can have some type of anticipation of actions of your partners and other positions on the tactical deployment. Here you had people from different agencies don't know what their training actually is or how they're going to respond in a certain circumstance, because their department's policies may very well be different, especially their two separate states, New Jersey and New York. The other thing is, and I think I've spoken to this in the past, where, you know, that elevator served as the entry point, essentially, or an exit point for the suspect. And to be deployed on both sides of it, the worst case scenario occurred here, where you were confronted with a lethal force scenario with officers on both sides. And I speak to this because I lost a dear friend who was a classmate of mine who was shot and killed by friendly fire in 2004. He was an LA County deputy sheriff, and they responded to a Motel 6 for a call of a man with a gun, and they deployed on opposite sides of the door. And when the suspects came out and a shooting occurred, my buddy was shot by friendly fire in the neck. And he was hospitalized and died on June 15th, 6 days later. So, you know, there's something to be learned from this. And, you know, Robert mentioned something about, you know, essentially, if you don't learn from your mistakes, you're going to make them again in the future. So let's learn from the mistakes of law enforcement, not just in that you make yourself or within your own organization, but that are lessons learned from other organizations within the country or even the world. So, those are basically the takeaways. My thoughts on how the guy with the long gun, I found it odd that he redeployed back into the, I don't know if the officer was shot by friendly fire, but that may have been a natural reaction to him knowing that he had shot that officer with friendly fire. And he deploys back out as he's trying to reassess what his next options are. I can't say for sure, but I found that just an odd type of tactical movement under those particular circumstances.
Yeah. I mean, it would make sense if, I mean, obviously, and that's a good point you brought up about them being on opposite sides of the bad guy. Poor planning. But then again, our shooter, our guy that had the advantage with a long gun, now he's somewhat neutralized because the backdrop behind our target, you know, are two friendlies, right? We've got two cops, and that may be very well why he had to leave cover, because maybe the angle wasn't good enough for him and he wanted to protect those guys. And maybe that's why he had to step into the hallway and leave cover and ultimately had to retreat as well. I suspect that they were doing interviews to try to find out what room the bad guy was in. That's what any of us would have done. And I mean, in my career, I can't tell you how many bad guys I found that were backed up in the parking places at little, you know, hotels, motels. And you always register the tag typically with the office, you know, in order to be able to park there. So, but just too bad they didn't have eyes on the hotel room yet, because you know, that surprise and being, you know, not in the ideal position was kind of unfortunate. So, but at least the good guys won.
And with their type of knowledge of the type of suspect they were dealing with, you know, they had some opportunity for prior planning. And what we would oftentimes use, we would utilize an undercover entity, whether it's vice or what have you, that would do what you just spoke of. They would show up and they would conduct some interviews where they couldn't get burned, but that the tactical aspect would be done by the uniform people, because you want the tactical element to be recognizable as law enforcement. So you don't get yourself into grease on that, where the suspect can say, well, I thought you were just a bad guy trying to harm me, where you got to make it so they can't dispute that they knew you were law enforcement at the time you're trying to take them into custody. Right. But, you know, use the time and the opportunity to have prior planning to maximize your ability to have a safe operation.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Gentlemen, we've got about 2.5 minutes. And so not really enough to cover another story with a video component, but anything else on this one? All right. So let me go here then. Bob, I know we don't have the opportunity to have you on the show a lot, so I'm hoping maybe, are there any, before we come to a close on this thing, any final words or any words of advice for our audience or maybe even people that existing law enforcement that want to get into undercover work, or maybe they want to go work on a task force, you know, for the feds, and maybe it could be the DEA or FBI, or maybe someone wanting to get into law enforcement. Any words of advice?
Well, I look at undercover as a science, and I give full credit to the wisdom of the leadership in two of the agencies that I was in to put together meaningful undercover training. My mentor in my first undercover class was Joe Pistone, the guy the book and the movie Donnie Brasco is based upon. Yeah. They went out of their way to get people who've really been there, done that, to be part of the leadership in the training. But it was not just them, but it was also it was leaders, and it was also psychologists who were involved in the process, because there are certain personality traits that some individuals have that when and if put into the temptations of totally unsupervised immersion into the underworld, are more likely to begin that slide down the slippery slope. You know, you and I know a former officer who's talked about in the betrayal, and I look at that situation and, okay, here's a guy who was an air conditioning repair guy for 5 years. He gets a job as a cop, and before you know it, because he speaks Spanish, he's thrown into working narcotics and doing undercover
as a rookie.
And I'm not making any excuses for him, because he almost got me killed, and very close to. I mean, he compromised me when I was working undercover in Colombia with the people that I was meeting with. But if you listen to him, he'll tell you, well, you know, I never got trained for this. I got thrown in the deep end. I got distracted. He was working with two informants from Colombia who were the most treacherous informants that you could ever imagine. And it didn't take them long before they had him wrapped around their little fingers. And he became their slave. And they made him a superhero by helping him make cases. But at the same time, they compromised his integrity. And the rest of it led to 11 years in prison.
You're right. You're right. Well, guys, we're winding this down, but don't go anywhere. I'm going to kind of wind this down, though, real quick here. Thank you so much for being on the show, Robert Mazur. And again, guys, make sure that you check him out at, is that at robertmazur.com?
Yes.
And also, we've got, I want to mention The Wounded Blue, and also Travis Yates and Jeff Winninger. And you got your book coming out on thinicebook.com. Gulls.com, Compliant Technologies, Gunler, and Blue the Gold by Medicare, Safeguard Recruiting, Two Bells. Thanks for watching the show, guys. And hopefully we see you guys back at 12 noon Eastern.